Do we clink our empty glasses?
No. Fuck you guys.
That's the entrance. That's what they call it. That's the intro.
Welcome to our entrances.
Welcome to our entrance.
It's just so late at night, guys.
Welcome back for another fun-filled episode of Gumshoe Weekly.
The epicenter of murder, mystery, and mayhem. I'm your host, Brianna.
I'm your host, Jellybean. From, what's that show? Not Archie. Riverdale. There we go.
I said the Powerpuff Girls.
The Powerpuff Girls. Is there a Jellybean character there?
No, I meant to say the Teletubbies. There's not a Jellybean character in that one either.
Yeah, I think you're thinking of Tinky Winky.
I think it's too late.
Tinky Winky. Poe.
I fucks with that shit hard.
Those are the only two names I know. Tinky Winky and Poe. And the baby.
Tinky Winky. Dinky.
La La. Poe.
Yeah, Poe is my favorite one.
I don't think Dinky is one. I think you made that up. You said Tinky Winky Dinky. You added no names to the list.
Dipsy. It's Dipsy. It's not Dicky. Dipsy. It's not
Dicky. It's not Lil Dicky.
Listen, man.
I reposted that picture that Lil Dicky posted literally within not even a full minute. Instagram was like, take that down, take that down. Did you see it? It's the one where he's standing there like this with his arms out. He's completely naked and he has his dick tucked back between his legs.
Oh.
So it's just him standing there.
Like a mangina.
And you can't see his dick. Yeah. And he said, if you guys all register to vote, and I think he was like, if we win this election, some shit. I think it was just registering to vote. He was like, I will repost this picture, but with no tuck.
Wow.
So I was like, to my story immediately, and then within a minute, not even a full minute, Instagram was like, no! No!
I have a question.
Great. What is it?
If you could pick any actor or actress to portray you in a movie about your life, who would you pick?
Oh, hands down, I'm gonna pick John Berthal.
I don't know who that is.
It's Shane from The Walking Dead.
to play me. To play JJ, the 28-year-old.
Because I just want... First of all, I'm not 28 yet.
The 27-year-old woman.
It's okay. Everyone at work calls me 30, and I just go with it.
Well, some people refer to me as Alonzo's mother, so...
No!
Yeah.
In a joke?
Like, they were surprised I was younger than Alonzo.
Oh my god, that made me.
And I was so mad at everybody. I didn't talk to anybody for the rest of the day.
Who thought this?
Evan's bitch ass.
Ew, I would have.
It was mad long ago. It was before I was cool with him, and I said, don't you ever fucking talk to me ever again.
You're like 3 years older than Evan. Evan is a bitch. You should kill him.
You should just kill him.
Every time I see you guys together, I'm like, look at the little brother and sister.
That's exactly what we are like.
Yeah.
Fucking brother and sister.
You look like your little brother and sister. It looks like you guys got the role because of your relationship and not for any other reason. We hired them to be partners because they're clearly brother and sister.
Like, I go today, I was like, Evan, did you ever make a woman cry? Did you ever make, like, a girl cry over you? And he goes, I don't know, probably. And I say, ew? Check your fucking ego at the door, bro.
Yeah, ew.
And then he was like, no, I don't think so. He was like, but maybe. He's like, I guess I gotta go make some girls cry. I was like, you're
what a monster. Fucking idiot. Ew, that's your brother.
He's very funny, though. I think we're learning a lot of things about each other, and I can appreciate it. Wow. Yeah, today for lunch, he had a breakfast sandwich. Then I gave him the rest of my Chinese food. And then, I think he also had a coffee. And then he also had a fucking Frappuccino. This was in 30 minutes.
How is he funding this?
He came up to the cafe and I go, are you getting a fucking Frappuccino right now? He goes, yeah. And then he gets his, like, with, like, I think extra espresso shots.
Because
because it comes out darker than regular Frappuccinos. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know you're going to shit yourself, right? You're just going to full-blown fucking push your bay and fucking shit yourself. He was like, please stop. Don't say that.
Don't say that. He's so sweet. Also, that's not how everyone's bowels work. So I can get why he's like, what are you talking about? Some people just eat and then they just poop one time a day at the normal time for them.
I don't get that because I had bubble gut later in the day. Clearly, I came here and shit.
I know. Every day you're like, hi, something rough. Something fighting
me. My stomach ain't steel like it used to be.
Something's fighting me from the inside.
Okay, wait, let's get back on track. What was the question?
I don't know.
Oh, if I had to choose somebody to...
Oh, wait, you don't want to know my reason I picked John Bernthal.
Why'd you pick Shane?
First of all, it'd be very funny.
Shane from The Walking Dead, guys.
It would be so funny. That'd be like casting The Rock to play me.
He also played The Punisher. It'd be funny if I casted The Rock to play me.
Yes.
A 4'11 small puss per... brown, but then I was like, no, he's brown too. And then I was like, I don't even know.
You're calling yourself a pussy. Go ahead.
Apparently. I don't know, man. Anyway, let's move on. I'm embarrassed.
Also, John Berthal's very hot and a good actor. And also, he's very, like, stoic, but also incredibly charming. And I think those are both me.
Okay.
I'm both very stoic. Like, I've got a lot of walls everyone has to climb over. Uh-huh. I'm also incredibly charming.
Fair enough.
So, it would be perfect.
Okay.
And he's really hot.
I think I would pick the chick that, I'd pick Juno. What's her face? Ellen Page. I'd pick Ellen Page to play me.
She would literally be like, and you'd be like, yes, girl. And she's like, I'm not in the mode yet. And you're like, oh, you just weren't moving your face at all. So I thought you were in.
I feel like she'd play a good me, because she was also very good in Juno.
You know what movie she's the best in? My question is now going to be, what's your favorite Ellen Page movie? And I'm going to tell you it's... God, what is that fucking one called? Not Jawbreaker.
Hard Candy. Yes. Me and Alonzo talk about that movie all the fucking time. Hard Candy.
I think of that movie.
I don't remember watching the entire thing, but I remember some pieces
it's
of it.
It's fucking phenomenal.
Well, my favorite movie is Juno.
I like when she's like, I think I'm in love with you, because you don't stare at me like I'm pregnant. Yeah, because you guys fucked.
I think that was just a really good, well-rounded
movie. I like the way that she was always like, this kid that wants to have sex with me and it's very obvious to everyone, and everyone's like, what? And then she's like, he's obviously wants to have sex with me because I'm, like, weird. And I'm pregnant, so it's, like, a taboo now. And I love that, because, like, that's how I would be reading people, and no one appreciates it. And I really appreciated it when she did it.
Wow. All right, let's get into it.
Okay.
It's already 12 fucking o'clock.
We have 9 minutes. We can do it. Rock, paper, scissors. I don't have a hand. I was just
throw the pen.
Just be like,
rock, paper, pen.
Rock, paper, pen. And you're like, okay.
And then I die.
Rock. Then I die. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Scissors.
Paper.
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot. Rock. Scissors. Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Paper.
Rock. Oh, you won.
I win. You go first.
I went first last time.
I'm so excited to hear about your story. I just need to hear it right now.
I need to hear it. You need to not even listen to mine because I'm so excited for yours.
Exactly.
Okay, so. This is really a better follow-up story, but I will begin.
I love doing you first. That didn't sound right.
I love doing you first, too.
I just keep saying everything very wrong. Because when I'm editing, if I edit this one, I don't know, I always am like, oh, I'm next. I'm almost done editing.
That's such a weird, there's only two of us. So
know.
Once you finish someone, you always know you're almost done editing.
Yeah,
oh, thank God.
Got her out the way.
Okay, so mine works better if someone has warmed you guys up. So warm yourselves. And now let's start.
If you really want, I will go first.
I will go first, as you've made me. Wait!
I just said I'll go first.
Okay, you go first.
Okay. Have you ever heard of Circleville, Ohio?
Yeah.
No, you're gonna say no.
No. I lived in Ohio.
Oh. Okay. Well, Circleville, Ohio.
Why'd you ask me?
I don't know.
No. Say no.
Circleville, Ohio is your typical small town, suburban, wet dream.
Oh. No idea what happens in my wet dreams. I can tell you right now, it's confusing for everyone.
The kind of place. The kind of place. Shut up.
I'm trying. That one gave me a headache. Here you go.
Okay. The kind of place you want to raise your kids with neat green lawns, white picket fences, a neighbor waving hello and asking about the family, a place where nobody locks their doors and everyone knows you and yours. The town itself lies 25 miles south of Columbus, Ohio, and has a population of 13,000. From the outside, there would be little cause to doubt that it wasn't anything other than a cozy little town as it first appeared. However, that all changed in the late 1970s. The residents' cozy lives were turned completely inside out, and a once safe town turned into a place corrupted by hearsay and gossip that left the town in shock. One of the locals, Mary Gillespie, a mild-mannered bus driver of a local town school, in December of 1976, received an anonymous letter written in stretched block capitals that read, "Stay away from Messi. Macy. Stay away from Macy. Don't lie when questioned about knowing him. I know where you live. I've been observing your house and know you have children.
Okay.
This is no joke. Please take it serious. Everyone concerned has been notified and everything will be over soon." The letter accused Mary of having a supposed non-existent affair with the superintendent of the school, Gordon Macy.
Why is it always like that?
Why are bus drivers always having affairs with
someone? No, why is that always the like, I'm going to send you an anonymous letter about you having an affair with this random person that you've never met or whatever.
I don't know, girl. Let me have an affair. No, no, you have an affair and then you let me.
Yeah, no, I'll let you.
No, no.
No.
Postmarked Columbus, Ohio, and had no return address. Shooken up, Mary hid the letters.
Oh my god, I know this one.
I thought you already knew it.
Well, I knew where it was.
Okay.
But I saw an episode of Drunk History about it. Go on.
Shooken up, Mary hid the letters that continued to come and moved on with her every day, concealing her fear and the terrifying letters, and watched her own activities. She did a pretty good job until a letter arrived addressed to her husband, Ron.
Oh, Ron.
The letter very bluntly stated that if Ron did not stop his wife's affair, his life would be in danger.
Oh, sexy.
Sure. Mary admitted to Ron that she had no idea what they were referring to, as there was no affair to begin with. So, they agreed to ignore it because if word got out that someone who was usually pretty reserved had a hand in something so salacious, this would ruin her reputation, no matter the fact of it being true or not. We all know how gossip works, right?
Mm-hmm, 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 mm-hmm.
So for a few weeks, it was quiet and no letters came. Until another letter arrived in the mail with a much more sinister message. Gillespie, you have had 2 weeks and have done nothing. Admit the truth and inform the school board. If not, I will broadcast it on CBS, posters, signs, and billboards until the truth comes out.
Ooh.
The couple deliberated on who could be the possible author of these letters. They decided to share what was happening to them and told first Ron's sister Karen and her husband Paul and Paul's sister. Mary told them she had a gut feeling it was a fellow bus driver, that a fellow bus driver was behind it. They came up with a few suspects. one being David Longberry, which was her coworker who had made an advance on her, but she had rejected him. So they thought it was like a scorned lover.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I need revenge.
Yeah. And Bill, or William, the letters were signed with a W, so they thought it was a Bill or a William,
mm-hmm.
who Macy's son, Gordon Macy's son, had the name William, and they thought it was him trying to protect his mom.
Oh.
So.
Kind of roundabout.
Yeah. So they decided to test their hypothesis, and they wrote several similar letters to the ones they had received, and they outlined that they knew who he was and what he was up, and asked that this stopped to avoid a violent outcome. This looked as if it worked when the letter stopped for a while. Until. August of 1977, now 9 months from the initial outbreak of mail, Ron was at home taking care of his children and Mary was away on a trip when Ron received a mysterious phone call. He quickly slammed down the phone receiver, grabbed his gun, a small .25 caliber pistol, and stormed out of the house, telling his kids he was going to go confront somebody. It seems Ron may have recognized the voice, but no one would ever know because in an intersection down the road from their house, Ron was found dead. He had crashed his car directly into a tree. And upon police investigation, it was discovered that Ron's gun had been fired once, with no reason as to why, seeing as he just left the house and no gunshots were reported. The crash was ruled to be a genuine accident, even though strange facts emerged. Upon a post-mortem examination, the records show that Ron's blood alcohol level was 1.5 times the legal limit, and those that knew Ron best of all confirmed that he was actually a teetotaler. I don't know what that is. I looked it up. It's like a somebody who abstains from alcohol.
Oh.
I can't pronounce it, though.
How's it spelled?
It's spelled T-E-E-T-O-T-A-L. But I think it was like a teetotal, like a I can't fucking pronounce it.
I don't know. I feel like you did good.
Yeah. I looked it up this time. I liked it so much, I put it in my story. Anyway, the sheriff was once said to have admitted that there was more to the crash than met the eye, but later denied this claim. And the phantom letter writer began to get in contact with several residents, almost begging for a more thorough investigation to be conducted. It was almost as if the author wasn't satisfied with the accident's conclusions. So, with the death of Ron, the letters still did not slow down, and over the years, Mary continued to receive them. Between 1977 and 1983, Mary received around 39 letters in total. Mary and Gordon did come out after Ron's death and admitted that they were having an affair, but insisted on it only beginning after the death of her husband.
I don't believe it.
Nobody does. However, the letters did eventually escalate to posters and signs spreading along Mary's bus route. Almost all focused entirely on her alleged affair, and several threatening not only her and Gordon Macy's job stability, but the life of Mary's children, too. One of the signs was particularly crude and about her daughter. Apparently, it was about her daughter having an affair with the superintendent, too. Real crazy shit.
That's gross.
Yeah. Mary stopped the bus and went to take it down. As she was about to take it down, she noticed something curious. A length of twine hung from a crudely made box that the poster was attached to. She removed the entire structure from the roadside and brought it back onto the bus. As she pried open the lid, splitting the glue that held it all together, she found inside two large blocks of styrofoam, holding a pistol in place and the twine attached to the trigger. So, this crudely built trap was designed to fire at anyone who tore down the sign. After a few hours, she decided to take the firearm to the police station, and upon further inspection of the gun, they found the serial number had been poorly scratched off in an attempt to hide the owner. On February 25th, 1983, Sheriff Radcliffe invited Paul Fresher. Do you remember who Paul Fresher is?
Mm-mm.
That's Ron's now ex-brother-in-law. Remember the three people that they told?
Mm-hmm.
Paul was one of them. That's Ron's ex-brother-in-law. to accompany him to the station to answer some questions about the letters. He was asked to copy the handwriting as best he could, and then they read the letters to him to write down, to like have mm-hmm. him repeat it. Following this peculiar form of handwriting analysis, Paul took the sheriff to his home to show him where he normally kept the gun in the garage. Naturally, his gun was missing, as it was currently in the police care. Paul claimed it had to have been stolen, however, the sheriff decided otherwise and arrested him for the attempted murder of Mary Gillespie. On October 24th, 1983, Paul's trial began, and Paul pleaded not guilty. He also supplied an alibi for the entire day that the booby trap was found by Mary. And despite many facts building a relatively strong defense, at the end of the very public proceedings, Paul was found guilty of attempted murder and sentenced to 7 to 25 years in jail.
Oh.
Some of the stuff that he had, the facts that were, like, in his favor was the fact that the day, 20 minutes before she found the trap, somebody saw a sandy-haired blonde guy, standing around the sign with a yellow, real fancy car. I don't remember mm-hmm. the make of the car. He was hanging out around the sign 20 minutes before Mary found it.
Mm-hmm.
It was very public. It was probably persuaded by the media, like most cases are, to be, oh, he did it. He's the only mm-hmm. person that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So he was found guilty of attempted murder and sentenced to 7 to 25 years in jail. The town felt that they could breathe a little easier with Paul now behind bars, but they were mistaken once again, and once behind bars, Paul, the letters started up, and letters even started getting sent to Paul himself, taunting him. One said, "Shame how things work out, but better you than me. The sheriff says you did it, but we know better, don't we?" Real fucked up.
That's so fucked up.
Yeah. In 1988, he applied for parole, but his appeal was denied. And then, in an act of desperation, he submitted himself voluntarily for 3 separate polygraph tests, all of which he passed. Though his next appeal in 1993, he was once again denied early parole. Finally, in 1994, after 10.5 years behind bars and statements from prison wardens were made, that cast strong doubt in his ability to send letters from his position in jail. His appeal was granted, and he was released. So he couldn't... There was no way he was smuggling out letters.
Uh-huh.
And also getting them.
Yeah.
And he was also, like, a model prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
He was finally granted his release, and throughout all of this, still the letters continued.
Wow.
Once out, Paul made a 176-page PDF, which you can find online now, which he talks about the case, the before stuff, all the evidence that they tried to use against him, all the evidence they didn't look into, and his theories, starting with the cover-up by Roger Klein, the prosecutor who put Paul behind bars. He was investigated based on the allegations that he had gotten a school teacher pregnant and had her murdered to protect his career.
Okay.
And according to one count of the Circleville letter writer debacle, the police investigated the allegations and spoke with the parents of the deceased girl that the letter writer threatened to dig up the information on her.
Mm-hmm.
The couple spoke out with an Ohio TV station and confirmed that the allegations were true. Roger was also hiding something.
Mm-hmm.
The letter writer also accused a man named Ray Carroll, which was the county coroner, of helping cover up the whole story. Because remember, they had somebody look at Ron's body.
Mm-hmm.
He had been accused of sexually abusing several children, and the anonymous writer posted that Sheriff Radcliffe had mishandled the case on purpose. In December of 1993, Dr. Carroll was charged with 12 counts, 8 of them alleging the doctor of gross immorality, sex crimes, corruptions of a minor, pornography, obscenities, and indecent exposure.
Okay.
And last but not least, do you remember who David Longberry is?
Mm-mm.
He's the guy that came on to, that's Mary's coworker who came on to her.
Mm-hmm.
Mary and Ron initially suspected he might be the Circleville letter writer. Well, Longberry forcibly raped an 11-year-old girl in 1999 and became a fugitive on the run, and while on the run, committed suicide.
Oh my god.
So all these people had a hand and all their dirt was about to get put on blast. They let Paul take the fall for all the letters. While Mary had been marked as a focal point of the writer, she was not the only recipient, and in the same period, letters to the residents of Circleville totaled into the thousands, enough to fill a storeroom in the Pickaway County Police Station.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So, they were also saying that Karen, which was Ron's sister, lived in a trailer on Mary's property after they divorced, after, Paul and her divorced, and she was the one who was the Circleville letter writer, because she was always, putting Paul's, like, business on blast and saying how bad, like, always speaking ill of him, and she was the one who stole his gun. She was, dating and now married to the Sandy Blonde, why do I keep saying Sandy Blonde? The blonde man with the yellow car that everybody was seeing. New husband had blonde hair and a yellow car. So everybody was like, oh, she got a hand in it.
Yeah.
But everybody's dirt was getting blown up. And every man was for himself.
Yeah.
And that's the story of the Circleville letters.
Wow.
Oh, I also got most of my information from media.com, Dark History Podcast, Factonite.com, and historicalmysteries.com.
Okay.
On Wiki. Wikipedia.
Wikipedia. I got all my information from Wikipedia and from this YouTube channel called Conspiracy Team. I know that previously in episode 43, I know the Jersey Devil personally, the one we talked about, Anthrax Island. I sowed seeds of doubt within some of you, our dear American listeners, regarding our government. this was also the theme during number 38, Operation Midnight Climax.
You really went back and did your work.
I did. I did. I thought it would be annoying if I didn't know the exact name, and I didn't realize Operation Midnight Climax is literally named after the operation. So I was like, oh, that's perfect. So, the Midnight Climax episode. However, both of those stories had entirely factual roots, or were just completely true. this is an unintentionally recurring theme, because today we're talking about the Men in Black.
Dun, 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 dun. I don't know the theme song.
Dun, 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 you're doing the, like, 007.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. Okay, anyways, I don't know any of the theme songs, actually. So.
I think it sounds a lot sexier than what we were just doing.
Probably.
It's like, dun, dun, dun. I don't know. Dun, dun, dun. Sounds like the beginning of a spy espionage porno. I don't know.
Fucking, what's the beginning of Double Summer? It's like, dun, 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 dun. It's just, like, terrifying. And it's so fucking loud. Dun, 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 dun. I love that game. Okay, so, now, before you put a tinfoil hat on me and discredit everything I say, hear me out.
I already have a tinfoil hat.
I brought mine from home.
I made it myself.
You made it myself. I got off an old leftover. So, before agents J and K, our favorite Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones joint, the man in black was a slow-growing figure to be feared amongst ufologists, which are people who study UFOs.
Believe in that shit. Horde.
Yes. They used to call them believers. They used to call them conspiracy theorists. Now they call them ufologists.
Now they call them...
Which is also a term we used in that one... I briefly used that term for a minute in the episode about Yara.
I think I used it, too, in another episode.
Hell yeah.
No, I used Egyptologist.
That's an entirely different thing, yes. Brianna.
Remember, I always make things up.
Remember, I'm a liar. So, the first known encounter with the Men in Black was in 1947, which is also the first UFO sighting.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The Maury Island incident is referring to an instance in Puget Sound where two men reported falling metal aluminum debris, which struck a man and a dog on a boat, and an aviator named Kenneth Arnold, who reported seeing several UFOs in the area, six to be exact. The aviator reported both to two Air Force intelligence officers who didn't believe it was anything to worry about, but not wanting to, like, embarrass him, they didn't say that to him. Overall, it's believed to be a hoax, but the officers both died in a crash on the way home.
Oh.
That they reported it to. And the two men who told Mr. Arnold about the falling debris also claimed to have been approached by a man in a dark suit that warned them not to talk about the incident.
Okay.
This was the beginning of a long and at times ridiculous or believable legend that grew until it became comics, books, and movies with our friend Will.
I have a question, though.
Yes, about Will.
What the fuck is the problem of us knowing about aliens? I think it's so small-minded to think we are the only thing in this vast universe.
Well, fucking this year, they admitted to UFOs existing. They put that shit out. They released they quietly released the information. I don't remember which.
I think a lot was going on, and they were like, let's look.
They put it out, and everyone just was like, there's too much right now, but it was literal proof of aliens.
Yeah. It's so dumb to think that there's not.
Yeah. I think we're going to have to do an in-depth alien episode.
My cousin, her stepbrother is in the he's in the military, and he was like, there's at least, I think it was 31 or 51 known aliens walking among us that are, like, out. He's like, they walk right next to you every day. You wouldn't even know. He was like, but there's at least 31 or 51 confirmed aliens on Earth. But they don't want you to know.
Who? The aliens or the people?
The government, of course.
Okay, because, like, are they good aliens?
Obviously, we're not dead yet.
Some people are dead.
Did you ever hear about the deal that JFK made with the aliens?
No.
I guess I gotta do an episode about that.
Oh my fucking god! The next episode's gonna be an alien episode. Oh my god, I'm so stressed out. We need to get more information about everything involved, because this is giving me some panic. sugar water. Anyway, so.
Okay.
It's from the Men in Black movie. So, they have been described through varied lenses as dressed in black suits, unusual, threatening, demonic supernaturals, dark skin, and or having exotic facial features.
They're ghosts, but there's no aliens. sounds like.
Yeah. So the consensus is that they are quasi-government officials quasi-government agents that use harassment, threatening, or assassination to protect secrets and perform strange activities. Their presence is almost always linked to UFO sightings, and they may even be aliens themselves.
Hey, shut the fuck up. You didn't see my brother. You didn't see my alien cousin.
You're stressing me out now thinking about your friend's confirmed aliens.
What
does that mean? How'd they confirm that they're aliens? Why are they walking among us? Why isn't anyone stopping them? I don't understand what's happening.
But aliens are not bad.
I know, but
what if they're exactly like us? They just got like an extra toe or no belly button.
How do they know that's the thing? How do they confirm that it's an alien?
We're cool. Go live in the world.
You think that they did that and they didn't go, we need to test you forever? Or do you think they got sick of testing people?
Maybe there's some sort of agreement.
Area 51 was so long ago.
Think about it this way. I heard a rumor. That JFK made a deal with aliens that they can take a certain amount of humans a year. That's why so many people go missing.
Have you ever watched the show?
Half of them are dead because regular humans. The other half are missing because aliens.
Have you watched?
I'll take my tinfoil hat off now.
The show People of Earth.
No.
You have a shirt of it, though.
I do, but it's because I went to Comic-Con that year.
You have to go and watch it, because it's fucking incredible. They did cancel it after two seasons, and it was so fucking good. And Ozzy, the main character, that really good comedian, he gets sent to a town to interview these believers. They call themselves experiencers. And
I saw the first episode.
Okay, yeah. But then he realizes that he has a connection.
Yeah. And I think in, like, the first or second episode, doesn't he get taken or something?
I don't know. He gets the thing where you hit the deer. Mm. And then he wakes up somewhere else. So,
yeah,
that's, like, a thing that happened to a few of them. Anyways, he was gay with an alien.
Wasn't, like, one of the aliens, like, gay, and then the other one was, like, you're kind of a dick? Or one of the
aliens, I don't know which ones you're talking about, but yes, quite a few of them were dicks and beautiful and gay.
Well, there you go.
There was once, okay, the gray is the little, so there are three, okay, so let's all stop. There are three kinds of aliens, traditionally. The grays, which are the little green guys that you see, and they have three fingers and the huge bug eyes, and they're like, and they're little, and that's, like, the traditional alien. Then there's the
Spice Girl aliens.
They're called whites. The white.
Do you know what I'm talking about with the Spice Girl aliens?
Oh, yeah. And they touch their boobs. That's fucking gross. I think about that all the time in, like, I think that was part of what scarred me as a child, was seeing that gross, huge finger touch that girl's boob non-consensually. The lizards, I don't remember what they call them, though. The lizard people, they don't call them lizard people, I don't think.
That's what our government's made.
They're fucking lizard, well, and yes, they're lizard people. And then the whites are that one beautiful Norwegian alien. There's a bunch of them.
That's the ones that are living among
they're
us.
They're beautiful. What the fuck else is that guy in? I'm going to need to research him, because he was a really good actor. Anyways, there are some gay people on the show. There's some gay aliens. Oh, there's some galians, as you call them. There's some dicks. One of them, Kurt, oh, he's a huge asshole. I love him. I think he's a lizard guy. But yeah. And they wear skin suits. And there's a bunch of really good actors on that show.
What if I'm an alien and I don't even know it? Because my weird zipper.
Oh yeah, your zipper. We should try to unzip that one day. Episode 500. We're going to unzip Brianna's zipper. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what episode we referenced that in, so if you're a diehard, you know what we're talking about. I'm pretty sure it's on the Instagram, too.
I think that's the last thing we posted on the Instagram.
Great. Cool. We're doing great. They may be aliens themselves. Mm-hmm. Writer James R. Lewis compared accounts of the Men in Black with tales of encounters with Lucifer, speculating that they are a kind of psychological drama. Okay. My mouth just got so dry. After the first publication.
All right, me.
I just turned into Sid the Sloth. Canonically. I once dated a guy that everyone called Sid the Sloth because he looked like Sid the Sloth. Anyways, I was crazy about him. Not anymore, though. Don't worry. But, so, after the first publication about them, the Men in Black mentions recurred through the 50s and 60s, leading ufologists to adopt a conspirational mindset, causing them to fear retaliation when they spoke about their sightings or experiences. Jerome Clark stated that the Men in Black represent experiences that don't seem to have occurred in the world on consensus reality. Historian Aaron Gullius attributed the increase in Men in Black encounters to their increasingly complex and paranoid visions.
Julia Gullia.
Oh my god, that's a person. We have to cut that out.
Julia Gullius from The Wedding Singer with Adam Sandler.
Oh, okay, we can leave that in. John Keel, our friend who wrote the Mothman prophecies, believed that some of the encounters were miscast mundane events, specifically sourcing 1967 when he was mistaken as a man in black when he went in search of a phone to call a tow truck in rural West Virginia.
They were like, you're a fucking alien.
They were like, you're one of those men in black. And he was like, I need a tow truck. So,
he's like, hey, can I use your phone? They're like, oh my god, it's the Men in Black. What the fuck did they go through that they were like, right? Oh my god, it's the fucking Men in Black, guys.
And it's like, right after the Mothman thing, so it's not even like it was an exciting town before then. It was just a regular town.
What a load of shit.
What a crock of bullshit. Anyway, so the Men in Black became... This is a lot of animals. Sometimes I say
you
that
You have to
work.
Detach your face, your lips from your mouth. This is a lot of
That's just what my mouth does anyways. So, then they became popularized in the media. Generally, the plot of the X-Men movies, you got Logan, you got Professor X, you got a bunch of little kids who no one loves them except for their teachers, you got Rogue, she should have been in love with Logan. Anyways, they should have ended up together. Okay, what the fuck was I saying?
Virginia.
Men in Black.
Telephone. Oh my god, it's the Men in Black here.
We've moved past the things you're saying. Oh. I am leaving all of that in. Virginia, telephone. Oh my god, it's the Men in Black here.
If you zoned out, I'll give you, these are the, just listen to what I'm saying. Synopsis. Bullet points.
Bullet points. And now I'm going to start a whole other thing and they're going to be like, what the fuck? The bullet points didn't get me ready for this? Anyways, so the plot of the Men in Black films, if you haven't seen them, which also I have the last one in my queue and I cannot fucking wait to watch it. The plot of the first one is essentially that Will Smith notices this thing. So it's like a weird alien encounter. So he goes to this building, right? And I can't with the way your eyes are doing that. You're like, everywhere
to say this. It's so late.
It's fucking upsetting me because you're acting like I'm flinging spit into your eyes. Like off of my fan, I'm like, and you're like,
gross.
I do like I'm waterboarding you.
Oh my god.
Oh my god. You're ridiculous. Stop.
You sound like the girls in that fucking show. The Pen 15 one. Oh my god, stop.
I've never seen it.
It's so good.
Okay, so...
But you know when you were younger and you and your friends would just yell stop at each other? Stop.
I do that to you now. Stop it. So, okay. Anyways, he's really good. They want to make him a man in black. They burn off his fingertips.
What did I miss?
Pay attention.
No, go on.
Will Smith.
Okay.
Men in Black.
Okay.
They burn his fingertips off. He can't have family ever again. They take away his name. He just becomes... Is he Jay? He's Jay.
Yeah.
He just becomes Jay. And they're like, we're going to teach you all these really cool things to help protect alien life and also to fight bad guys. And you just need to keep these secrets forever. And you get a dog and it wears sunglasses and a little suit. And you meet all these really cool aliens. And you get to be best friends with Tommy Lee Jones. So he does that. And they do all this really cool big shit. At some point, Kay loses his memory. Monk is there. His head gets exploded. But they also, a big key point is that they respond to every incident with aliens or extraterrestrial or anything. They show up there, they find out what happened, they solve the situation, they help the alien or get rid of the alien. And then they pull out their little pen light and they go, look at this really quick for me. And they put on their sunglasses and they shine it in your face and you forget everything. And then they tell you what you were doing for that evening. Mm-hmm. So... They still, even though it's a fun and exciting thing, they still do erase your memories. They still do try to cover up the UFOs and everything to protect everyone. So, I like to think that's what Will Smith is doing right now instead of filming Bright 2, is he's protecting us from all the aliens you're telling me live amongst us. So, another popularized... key point touchstone that Men in Black were in was in the X-Files. Did you ever watch that? It all circles back to David Duchovny.
Always.
I bet that train woke that dead guy up.
Hopefully.
So, In the X-Files, the Men in Black are recurring characters. It's a group of enforcers employed by the Syndicate, which is a shadow government group that covers up extraterrestrial life, to execute assassinations, cover-ups, and other covert operations. Most of them used to be part of special ops units, and a lot of them have no civilian identities, and they rarely speak. They also are analogous to alien bounty hunters on that show.
Okay.
So a little bit more sinister than our fun, cute little Will Smith movie. So, I'm going to tell you about some incidents now involving the Men in Black.
Uh-huh.
So, there's the Solway Firth incident. Jim Templeton took a photo in a field of his daughter. Upon developing, he noticed a strange man in a spacesuit behind his daughter.
Oh, I've seen that picture.
Oh, you have? With the little girl sitting, and then it's like, okay.
It looks like an astronaut's coming out the side of her head.
Yes, perfect. I was going to show you a picture now, I don't have to. Suspecting a factory error, he contacted Kodak, but they confirmed that it was a real person. He is then approached by two men in black who only refer to themselves as number 9 and number 10. They demand that he take them to the origin spot for the photo, but as he hadn't seen the man, he couldn't help them. They allegedly became hostile and stormed off. Later, he's...
Bitch, I told you I didn't know.
I don't know where that is. Go fuck yourself! And they just leave. They allegedly... Okay, no, I said that. Later, he is contacted by a missile launch pad in Australia who saw two men similar to the man in his photo. The missile at their launch pad had been manufactured 20 miles from where he took the photo.
Okay.
He was in, like, Scotland. They're in Australia.
Oh.
They're like, we got that guy here. We got two of those guys here. So, there's the Canada hotel encounter. The bellboy tells the manager that the previous day, two tall men dressed in black wanted to speak to the manager in reference to a UFO sighting. They became perturbed when they found out he wasn't around and started talking about the government and conspiracy theories. The agents had no eyebrows or facial hair. They were incredibly tall. They had pale skin, large blue eyes, and completely identical faces.
So they were Slender Man. With blue eyes.
Their hair appeared to be wigs attached to their hats.
I hate that. They had Guy Fieri hair with the fucking... Yes. You know, they fake hairs that they had attached to the fucking...
Yeah, yes, yes.
What are those called?
Wigs?
No, what is the hat called?
Visors?
They had the hair attached
Bucket
to the
hats.
Yeah. No, the visors, because you could see the hair through the top. And it's always like frosted
tips.
Oh,
yeah.
Imagine that. I'm really tall. Guys, I look exactly like with blue eyes.
Yes. Let me just find... Okay. Those guys.
Oh.
Just two regular men, right?
Mm-hmm. What year was that video? It looks pretty modern.
I have no idea.
Yeah. Okay.
So there is CCTV of them, which I just showed you, and it is the only CCTV footage captured of the Men in Black.
Oh.
That we know of.
Yeah.
So then this last one, it's kind of scary. So the Alaska law firm encounter. Receptionist Nicole is alone when a man in all black walks by the window, stops, and stares at her for around 30 seconds before coming in.
Okay.
She shakes her head and points out like she's asking him to leave. I don't know what he says, but she reaches into a drawer and stands up with a gun in her hand. Here, just press play on this and just watch.
Is it scary? Am I going to be able to sleep?
I don't think you'll be scared.
It shows him walk in? I don't want to see this if it's scary.
Just watch it. So you can see... through the shades in the window at first. I mean, I don't think he's going to show it to you there.
So now you can see they are in conversation.
Scared the fuck out of me.
Yeah.
It looks like he and Nicole shakes her
watch
head
closely.
And asks the MIB agent to leave.
The movements he then does with his hands are odd, and she puts the gun down on the far counter with the clip removed. Like, she had stood up. You saw. She stood up, like, ready to use it.
Mm-hmm.
He points at her handbag, and she gets out her camera. Slowly, but steadily, she walks around the counter, looking like she might have been hypnotized. Without looking at him, she slowly walks out, and he follows her. And she was never seen again.
Fuck.
But didn't you see the weird hand motions?
He did do a really weird, like...
Yeah, he was like... And then she literally went from, you just said something so upsetting that I've got a whole fucking gun out,
mm-hmm.
to now I'm going to unclip it really quick. So I'm going to make it so I definitely can't even grab it really quick. And you can tell by her, like, hand motions that she knows how to use it, but isn't, like,
mm-hmm.
incredibly comfortable with it. Like, just the way she holds it when she stands up. And she goes ready to shoot him to, I'm going to unclip this and then just do whatever you want. But in that video, right before you see that, she's alone in her office for maybe, like, 2 minutes after her coworker, who was the last person to see her, goes out on lunch. And you see him, like, chatting with her, and she's, like, super, you know, involved in whatever. And then all the way up until the guy tells her to get her camera, she's still, like, super
mm-hmm.
motion-filled until you can see the change in how she is as she goes to walk out. Yeah. So, she's only alone for maybe 2 minutes before you notice someone walk by the window and just stop there. And you can see the black of his suit
mm-hmm.
through the curtains. And he just stands there for, like, a good 30 seconds watching her through the window before coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the video, they talk for, like, maybe 10 seconds, and she's telling him he needs to get out, and then she's pulling a gun on him.
Hmm. It was creepy.
It was fucking weird. I don't know what to do with it. That video is called... So that's by Conspiracy Team, and it's called Real Men in Black Sightings. If you can't find it, which I tried to look it up multiple times, because I found it through a link... But if you can't find it, just look up Men in Black Real Reddit. And the first thing, like, one of the first posts that comes up. And once you click on it, it'll give you a link to a video. Anyways, you guys should all watch it if you're at all interested in any of the things that I was talking about. Because some of them are... The thing is that he uses, like, actual footage of two of them. And you're like, this does not look hokey. This looks like... some shit. Like, I don't know what I'm looking at here, but it's quite mm-hmm. alarming. And that's the Men in Black.
That was crazy. I've never known any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought it was just a movie.
Yeah, I didn't know it was real until I was fucking looking up Mothman. And it had in the links, Men in Black. And I was like, the movie? It was not the movie. That shit was scurry. I never got that far in X-Files either. Everyone is sketchy as fuck on X-Files.
Everyone's an alien on X-Files.
Yeah. Oh, God, I need to finish that show. Anyway, so I hope you guys feel like you can sleep tonight, but also that you'll look at the world a little differently.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's what we'll both be doing tonight.
Yes. I don't know what I'm going to do with
everything we know. I feel like it's very irresponsible to think that we are the only ones.
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, on a lighter note, make sure you're registered to vote.
Yep.
Register immediately.
Probably should have said that in our last episode.
It's okay. We can post it on the Instagram. So, register to vote. Share us with your faves.
Mm-hmm.
Tell everybody everything. About yourself. All your secrets.
Tell your friends, hey, fun fact. Men in Black are real.
Men in Black are real, and you shouldn't feel good about it. You should feel very alarmed. You should feel very unsafe. They're not all fun and sexy, just like that one. Those two fun and sexy ones.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to follow us on our Instagram and Twitter, it's...
Gumshoe Weekly.
Our Facebook is...
Gumshoe Pod.
And our email is...
gumshoeweekly@gmail.com.
Thanks.
Bye.